Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special episode of the Football Ramble. It's an on-the-continent takeover. Andy Brassel and James Horncastle here from our European football sister show as Pete and Jim are both away. Luke Moore is, of course, by my side, steadying this ship.
I was about to say, don't forget about me.
It's the first time we've had guests on the Football Ramble, Andy.
And hopefully the last.
Yes.
Charming. Yeah. Charming. Thanks for that.
We thought to ourselves, you two disgrace yourselves twice a week, every week on the continent.
Yes.
Disgrace ourselves.
The home of disgraced football podcasters is the Football Ramble. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Jim and Pete have got themselves out of it for a show or two. But we appreciate you stepping in.
Yeah.
Because I think the last thing that the listeners want is to really know what Luke and I think about the world of football.
Definitely. And also, just so you know, and so everyone can listen in as witnesses, you're not getting paid any extra.
Yeah.
Oh. But that's that.
Yeah, okay. Indeed it is. Indeed it is. But,
Show over.
Yes. Yeah. Indeed. Of course, we're going to talk about the two Manchester sides, Arsenal and Bournemouth, but we shall start with Manchester United and Newcastle United. And it's a shame that Pete's not here to talk about such things.
Well, it would have been a shame had they saw it out.
Yes.
But they didn't see it out, as usual. So he's probably lucky.
What? I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, maybe Newcastle should just think not... we shouldn't get in front in this game, because every time we get in front in this game, we lose. It just happens all the time. I think it's 8 times now that they've managed to get in front against United and just, like, you know.
Is it not ultimately Kevin Keegan's legacy?
I haven't thought about it.
Could they have been 12-0 up?
Yeah.
Have been,
anyway.
With a game in hand, that was.
Yeah. Philippe Albert!
Funny, actually, I think I captured the tragedy of it, because my wife is from Newcastle, as obviously her family.
Does that mean you're allowed to slag him off then?
Yeah, probably.
not his family.
Unless they're around, yeah. but basically, my in-laws were going to watch it on my BT subscription.
So
while they're going off during the first half, having an incredible time, I changed my password. So I was trying to look up
mugging them off.
The new password, and Michelle's mum's like sending her text going, "Oh, it's all right. Your dad's quite happy listening to it on the radio."
Yeah.
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 And
you'll repeat.
And then I finally got it working at half time. And so I get a text from my mother-in-law saying, "Well, hey, we've got it."
Yeah, great.
And obviously they got the not
How
so good half. So I feel a little responsible.
What did you make? So when this sort of result happens, when this sort of performance, this sort of game comes to pass, I always find that coming off the back of it and talking about it, it's quite a difficult thing to cover, because on one hand, you need to give Mourinho and Man United credit for the way they turned it around. But at the same time...
Do we have to give them that much credit?
Well this is going to be my question, because the first half, they were completely listless, absolutely listless.
I would give them credit, because only a week ago, we had, Chelsea-Liverpool, which was probably one of the games of the season, because both managers... Klopp was talking about this on Friday. He's like, at a certain stage, Maurizio Sarri turned to him and said, "God, this is fun, isn't it? We're really enjoying ourselves." And it was, and Klopp was talking about
Where do you reckon Mourinho the last week?
Mourinho and Benitez.
Klopp was talking about it in his press conferences, though. This is what football's all about. You know, we don't save any lives. We're not surgeons. You know, we're here to entertain people. Mourinho and Newcastle showed you can entertain people in a completely different way.
It's true. Yeah.
And for me, I found this more enjoyable than any other game this season.
For some reason, and I don't agree, but for some reason, people love horror films and are entertained by that as well.
Yeah,
it's a similar kind of idea.
This is being on the side of the road when there's a car crash and not being able to look away, isn't it? It's that kind of...
Manchester United,
disaster
certainly.
Tourism.
It is. And Mourinho's rant after the match and saying about the manhunts that were going on in his play, and it affected his players. I mean, presumably affected Eric Bailly very harshly as well. I mean, he was taken off after about 17, 18 minutes. I mean, Mourinho did embrace him when he went on. But
he got a good hug.
Yeah, but you have to... That's the thing, isn't it?
Is that a payoff, though, for being hooked?
And with the...
What's worse, Marcus, like being hooked after, 10 or 15 minutes, as Bailly was, then... Or being Victor Lindelof and staying on the bench and seeing basically him trying every other player as a centre back aside from you.
Yeah,
that's got to be worse.
It's a bit of a mugging off.
Well, Mourinho's like modus operandi now seems to be that, but they didn't give me centre back, even though they did. Mm. Even though he's basically been able to buy two centre backs for quite a lot of money, and you wonder, and we're getting to the stage now where maybe we can sort of question Mourinho's methods a bit more, because he's struggling and it's finding it tough, and they're going to be miles away again this season, I think we can all agree. But before this sort of came to pass, it was almost a bit difficult to question his methods because he has been so successful. But some of the things you see him do these days, with the way he treated Shaw last season, now, of course, you can argue that's worked out well, because long-term, Shaw's now playing quite well. But taking off a centre-half after 20 minutes, not bringing on a replacement centre-half, but bringing on a midfielder and moving your youngest really regular player into centre-back out of position and putting pressure on him when your team is already 2-0 down in a game when you're at home under a huge amount of pressure. You wonder whether that's the best way of protecting these sort of young players.
Well, you wonder if it's point-making, basically.
Exactly.
That's unlike Mourinho.
I know. First time for everything. But if you are going to be in the point-making business, perhaps... Like saying that, you didn't buy me the centre half I wanted, when one of the centre halves you wanted was Jerome Boateng, and has had the beginning to the season that he has after having the World Cup that he has.
Yeah,
I just keep quiet about it.
But on the comment about Boateng there, I mean, Boateng himself phoned Mourinho and was like, I'm not coming. Please, can you stop talking about me? Yeah. I mean, crying out loud. Yeah. Do you know?
I have left this WhatsApp conversation. Yeah. Stop it.
If
stop
I was bringing Mourinho, me back in.
If I was Mourinho when he did that, I'd have been saying, you should be bloody happy. I'm like, I've seen you play. This is a way out for you.
I find it extraordinary. I mean, Gary Neville's obviously been very vocal, as he tends to be, because that's what he's paid to do, and we do enjoy it. But he defends Mourinho quite a lot, actually. One of the more sort of vocal defenders of Jose Mourinho, apart from the Portuguese man himself. And says it talks about the board, it's problems at board level. I mean, does he have a point there? If Mourinho was to be removed from his position, do you think it would be a question that they would get in a manager, whether it be Zidane or Conte or, yeah, you know, somebody
like
that?
They need structure. They need football management structure. I think you can partly disagree with Gary Neville. You can think it's the board's fault and you can think it's Mourinho's fault. And yeah, I think more reasonable United fans are in that headspace anyway.
What would you think to... So Zinedine Zidane's agent has said that his client is unlikely to manage in England because he doesn't care for the style of football in the Premier League. But what do you think of Paul Merson's comments when he reckons...
I thought
that...
you were putting forward Paul Merson for it.
Yeah, it's very unlikely. Although he reckons that Arsene Wenger should replace Jose Mourinho at Old Trafford. That brings a smirk to your face, doesn't it?
And someone who doesn't need a football structure around him because he'll take care of it himself. Yeah. He doesn't believe in sporting directors.
But he'll take care of himself quite badly. Yeah. And I think that's the problem. On Neville, though, just before we talk about Newcastle, because they deserve a mention
Absolutely.
As well. On Neville, I wonder why... He does talk about the structure and he does talk about how they need more football people around. And I read a month or two ago that Mourinho had agreed to the idea of having a sporting director come in and all the rest of it. And we've talked a bit about that. But Neville never criticises the Glazers. And I wonder why that is. He's not so outspoken that he says it's the ownership. These owners have taken this amount of money out of the club and they've loaded a lot of debt onto it, and it's not a great way to run a football club of this size.
But they have spent big, though.
Fine, but he never... Well, fine, but they don't have a structure they need to compete at the top level, and they've not spent in the summer.
But that's not to do with cost cutting, though, is it? That's to do with like general incompetency.
Fine, but what I'm saying is...
Well, that's something to complain about too, though, isn't it, Andy?
Mm. Yeah. All I'm asking, if you are someone who's an ex-player, and, you know, a legend at the club and a good pundit, and you are in the business of criticising that club off the pitch, why are you only criticising some of the stuff off the pitch? Why are you not criticising all of it off the pitch?
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah. Anyway, good. All right.
Well, he probably liked
that point.
Yeah. Well, I think he likes going back there and watching the games.
Andy, you're familiar with the North East and Newcastle United.
Aye.
What did you? Yeah.
There you go. He speaks the language as well.
What did you make of their performance?
Well, they were brave, and they were a lot braver than you expect a Rafa Benitez side to be.
And what does that say about United?
Does that say about United? That's the thing. Everyone's saying they came back and, you know, showed some pride second half. I think that's the absolute bare minimum that you could expect. They still could have lost. They still could have lost in the second half, despite the fact they improved that.
They should have been 3-0 down.
Yeah.
John Joe. Mm. Sorry, that's my Brendan's John Joe. Yeah. I can never talk about him without channeling Brendan.
James, is very much all key on this podcast. Yeah.
But should he have had a penalty?
Well, he should have done.
Yeah, but, I mean, should have had a penalty. And should have had a corner at the bloody least.
That was a strange... I thought Anthony Taylor had a strange game.
Yeah. But even when he didn't see it, though.
In classic Arsene Wenger fashion, the referee just didn't see it. Yeah. That's why he didn't...
But even when it was 2-2, Mo Diame had a free header.
He made
a mess of.
I mean, you could say a 2-0 Rashford had a chance, you know. So it does go both ways, that.
Sure, but what I'm saying is that even when Newcastle were under the pump, the chances didn't totally dry up. And, you know, this was a team that had scored, what, 4 goals in 7 games or something?
Yeah, it was very poor.
Do you fear for
Newcastle this season?
Yeah, absolutely.
But look,
I just don't see where the end to it is. That's the problem. And the fact that Ashley started turning up at the games.
Yeah, that's
I
a
mean,
bit...
I mean, it's unpleasant. I don't see what it adds.
He's entitled. I mean, we could...
Of course he's entitled to. I said it was unpleasant. I didn't say it was unjustified.
When Mike Ashley eventually leaves Newcastle United, because of course he will at some point, the legacy...
Yeah, unfortunately, we'll all be about 70.
I was going to say,
The legacy he'll leave will be non-existent, and we all know that. But he is entitled to go to watch his team play, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, but I don't know. It's kind of false hope, really, for people, isn't it? Because you think, something must be happening. Mm. And it's like the Kenyan rumours. You know, it all seems very premature. Doesn't seem as if it's leading to anything, not imminently at least. And I think at the moment, you know, people have always said, you know, you can talk about
rich people, you know, state-sized wealth, buying Newcastle United, and that won't happen because it's a limited market, and they only get 50,000 or whatever, because they're the only gig in town. You know, forgetting the fact that Sunderland are 7 miles up the road or whatever. I think the way the Premier League's going, and if you talk to players, and especially overseas players who've arrived here in the last couple of years, they'll say the atmosphere, it's a bit of a myth, really. Right. You know, they're sold it on it being really visceral, fast football where the crowd are right up in your faces and it's really intimidating. Mm. And you talk to a lot of overseas players now who've arrived here in the last couple of years, and they're like, it's not as noisy or as intense as we thought it was. Now, that makes Newcastle not have a unique selling point, but when it's noisy there, I mean, sometimes it's quite quiet and tense because they're biting their nails and really worried about what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
But when it's loud, it's really loud. Now, that, I think, is a great global selling point for Newcastle United. If I had a few quid, I'd love to buy them.
Mm. Yeah, well,
if only you did, Andy.
Yeah,
if only you did.
I'd come in a far more pleasant man
than the aforementioned.
Go Harvest, actually.
Yeah, I'll go Harvest. Yeah, no problem. Just a final word on Manchester United. I know it's probably going against everything that Mourinho sort of stands for in terms of how he likes to manage and how he likes his teams to play. But watching that second half against Newcastle, I was just thinking, you know, you're going to be miles off the league anyway this season. You're going to be miles away, and a great way to relieve this pressure on you is just to play like you did in the second half. Throw a bit of caution to the wind, give your players a little bit more freedom, and fine, you might win the occasional game 3-2 and you might lose the occasional game 4-3. But ultimately, you've had such a bad... That's their first win at home since the opening day of the season. But it's not going to get much worse for Man United, is it?
We're talking about against one of the worst sides in the division.
And you're playing like that because of the situation you're in.
Mm. True.
Yeah, if they start from 0-0, as they always do, yeah, I think it's a kind of like, well, I don't think you'll see the kind of intensity and sense of urgency that there was about United in that second half. And it was completely dictated by the state of the game at that stage.
Sure, but I would just counter that by saying, with a lot of the personnel they have, Martial, Lukaku, Rashford, Pogba, Sanchez, Mata, one or two others, Luke Shaw likes to get forward, there's no reason you can't attack. There's no reason you can't attack with those players.
There isn't, and he has attacked. He's not always been this defensive 1-0 coach, but that has been the most... The biggest part of Mourinho's career. And you know, if you gave certain managers, if you gave Neil Warnock a load of technically gifted sort of continental type players, he's not going to suddenly go, all right, great, we can play.
Do you feel like I do that Joe Rawls tackle on Lucas Moura at Wembley is going to be the Cardiff season in microcosm?
I think that's going to be, if you were a club in La Liga or Serie A or somebody like that and you were trying to dissuade a player of yours to go to the Premier League for high wages and all the rest of it, go, do you know what they do over there? Yeah. And I'd play them that video. And the manager, the English manager said, well, he didn't try and take his life, therefore it shouldn't have been a red card. I think I'd very much say that in southern Spain.
We've all seen off-the-ball incidents. Let's move that to one side. off-the-ball incidents, you know, Eric Cantona into the crowd, you know, the old elbow here and there. We don't endorse that kind of stuff, but that happens. Take an off-the-field incident in a box and put it to one side. Is that the furthest away you've seen from the ball someone made a genuine tackle?
This reminded me of when you're playing FIFA with someone and you're about 5-0 down and then you just start scything people down.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Deliberate foul button.
Deliberate foul.
Well, the new FIFA where you can take off fouls, you know, that's what that is.
What he could have done there was grabbed his shirt or flicked his ankles and got a yellow card, which is basically what he was trying to do. Mm-hmm. But he just went, nah.
Oh, do you know what? Do you remember the Wayne Rooney one when he was still at Manchester United and there was a breakaway? I can't remember who they were playing against. Could have been West Ham.
Oh, was it from behind?
It was from behind. Yeah. Rooney thought to himself, oh, yeah, I've been watching about these tactical fouls. Yeah, I'm going to do one now. We'll just get a book in and that'll be great. And he smashes a player way off the ball and the referee's like, red card. He's like, oh, no. It's like crying out loud. Yeah. I appreciate English players trying to be a bit more catty and whatnot.
But that's the thing. If it's a striker, it's fair enough. I mean, when we're talking about Man United against Newcastle, there was that one, probably about 15 years ago when...
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
Yeah, on Andreas Anderson.
That's right.
And yeah, he was the only... He thought, oh God, I'm the only guy in the defensive half. I'm going to have to foul him.
Well, and basically because he was... There was 1-1, I think, the game finished and they were going for the title. And
they were.
He took the red card, but he knew it was a red card. He walked before the referee showed the red card there.
That's my favourite kind of red card.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I think so. Let's move on to Liverpool versus Manchester City. Both managers were satisfied after this one.
but I'm guessing the watching millions weren't.
I felt a bit short-changed by that game. I thought it'd be a real rip snorter. As Pete would say, a thigh rubber, but it wasn't really, was it? It seemed to be one, and we've not seen that type of game between these two teams under their current managers. Because do you remember we went through that phase of a good few years back in the day in the Premier League where the big teams playing each other were always ramped up and the hype was there, but they'd always disappoint. It would be really nip and tuck and it'd be really defensive. And we haven't seen that for a while. And this was almost an echo. It wasn't really defensive, but it was an echo of that kind of stuff, wasn't it?
I can imagine Mourinho watching that and saying, you see?
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
But look, I mean, the first 10 minutes, that was quite fast and furious. Thought Liverpool brought a lot of pressure. But then City managed to establish a bit of control in the game and were very good at denying kind of the Liverpool space, not only kind of to do stuff on the ball, but to just up the intensity, up the tempo, and really managed to slow them down. And yeah, I think it was telling that both managers at the end of this game, the players they chose to praise were how they defended, be it Van Dijk, but for the penalty he gave away, and Stones and the two fullbacks for City, who coped so well against Mane and Salah, particularly Mendy, who'd only just been coming back from injury. So,
and Fernandinho played like a bouncer.
Yes,
I thought.
He needed to.
Yeah, I mean, it was a Fernandinho game. It wasn't a Riyad Mahrez game,
think,
was it?
Do you think, James? Or
certainly not.
When I saw the teams, I thought that's interesting. Going for Stones and Laporte in the centre half. With Kompany and Otamendi on the bench, you know. And I suppose that showed what he wanted. They're always going to play it out from the back. That's how they play. But they were happy to drop very deep because they knew that was going to happen. And I think Guardiola, was it the first, not the first time, but was it a rare occasion where Guardiola did change things significantly because of the opponent? Because I think last season he probably thought, all right, in the 4-3, well, they Man City came back, scored a couple of late goals, you know, on another day might have got something, I don't know.
There was less of a sense of we'll play our game.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Because I think that's definitely because Klopp's record's so good against him.
But it's rare you see Guardiola do that.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Speaking of centre-backs, I thought it was absolutely ludicrous that Klopp broke up Gomez and Van Dijk. I'd have just played Klein. Klein's fit, isn't he? He wasn't in the matchday squad, but I think he's fit. And if he is,
Alexander Arnold was on the bench, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he got absolutely rinsed in midweek, didn't he, against Napoli? Yeah. And I think he was tired. And was it Mario Rui? Mario ruined him.
Yeah, which is extraordinary in itself.
Yes,
well, quite. And so I think that was a big gamble to push Gomez out because him and Van Dijk have had a good understanding.
Yeah, I mean, just to go back on you saying you feel short-changed, Luke. I mean, at the end of the day, this is the seventh game in 21 days. If you look at Liverpool's fixture list in particular, where they played PSG, they played Chelsea back-to-back, they've obviously played this game. And I think Klopp made a really interesting point at the end of his press conference on Sunday, where he said the Nations League is the most senseless competition invented ever. And his perspective on that was purely, we need to look after the players. Mm. The players are playing more than ever, adding another competitive competition, which matters and which is essentially leading national team managers to say, I've got to play this player because this game matters now. Yeah. It's not just a friendly. Mm. Is not helping, for example, Man City, Liverpool be the spectacle that people wanted it to be and expected it to be. I still think the context of that fixture, the recent history of that fixture, would have led to a game like the one we saw. But at the same time, yeah, I think the physical condition of the players is perhaps is also another explanation for why it never really fired in the way.
Well, yeah, Liverpool just didn't look like they had enough in the tank to press, did they? Mm. It looked like the game in the week caught them by surprise at Napoli and took a little bit out of them, maybe mentally as much as physically, actually.
What did you make of the Van Dijk challenge for the penalty?
I thought Carragher gave the best explanation of it that I heard, and I don't think there's a better one, which is when you're already anticipating what's going to happen. You're thinking about what you're going to do. He's thinking, I'm going to block a shot or a cross, and you go in for it, and instead the player's not about to do that, and it's too late, and you end up fouling. He's anticipating to block the ball. He's thinking the ball's going to come across, and instead the ball never comes, and so he ends up taking out the player.
And he almost gave one away. I mean, you could argue he gave one away before that on Aguero as well. He's quite lucky to get away with that. But
was that not Lovren?
Lovren.
In the first
it was,
half.
Sorry, yeah, it was Lovren.
I love the whole Lovren mime through that, where he was like halfway through the challenge and he's like, I'm not doing it again. I'm not doing it again. Yeah. I'm nowhere near
Aguero didn't really appeal to
that. And also, well, these foreign players, they're too honest.
Yeah,
they're too honest. They should go down like Ashley Young, you know.
And also, Aguero, Mahrez, Mane, Firmino, Salah, they're not playing Nations League next week. It's European competition. So.
Yeah, but at the same time, they've had a World Cup. They were all at the World Cup. I still think Salah is to some extent out of sorts from the shoulder injury.
He looks like he is. Yeah.
A lot of stuff that's gone on off the pitch, which I think can be quite destabilising with his country and his federation. It's the first time what that front three has gone four games without scoring. And I think to some extent, they do look a bit jaded.
They should have gone in for Eric Maxim Choupo-Moting. I think the thing is with Salah, like people, because the injury is not to his legs, people almost don't think of it as a proper injury. And like, oh, he'll be fine. Yeah. He'll be fine.
It's about mobility.
But yeah, you're right. And he does look a little bit tentative at times, doesn't he? I think the other thing as well, when you get a player who, and it's totally understandable because the World Cup's every 4 years and it's potentially the pinnacle of a player's career. When you go full on to play a World Cup that fitness-wise you probably shouldn't be at, there's always a massive hangover. It never works out well. You know, you look at the players, Shevchenko, Radamel Falcao, there's loads of them. I'm not saying it's going to affect him for that amount of time, but I think you've got to say it's going to have an effect.
So ultimately it all goes back to Sergio Ramos being an idiot again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As it tends to do in football.
Do you reckon Salah's seeing Sergio Ramos everywhere? Like, like in that film, what's it called? Don't Look Now. Where the little girl in the red jacket. Do you reckon he's seeing Ramos wherever he... If I was Stones and Laporte, I'd have had a little Ramos mask on my back. You know, like when a farmer's trying to deter a tiger from attacking them, they put a mask on the back of their head. Put a Ramos mask. Have Ramos's face shade into the back of your hair.
There you go, you see.
Well,
you
know, I didn't need to. They kept clean sheet anyway.
I was going
to
say.
Think about it for the return fixture.
Absolutely.
You know, I saw the highlights again of the Russia-Spain game in the World Cup the other day. And you know where Ignashevich scores that own goal? Ramos absolutely shamelessly tries to claim it as his own, despite the fact that he knows he's not scored it.
We love all that
and
stuff.
And he even does the celebration. And you know, he puts the imaginary phone up to his ear and he goes... He looks into the right down the barrel of the camera and he goes, "Te amas, I'm going to call you." I reckon Salah's watching that game.
He sees that in his nightmares.
Riyad Mahrez will see that penalty in his nightmares.
He will. Yeah, he will. And the thing, it's a poor penalty. There's no question about that.
He missed
it's a
the
poor
target,
penalty.
Yeah.
He did.
I thought the great thing about that, Luke, though, was as soon as he steps up, Sky flash up the graphic.
Yeah.
And you look at that graphic and you go, oh, that's bad.
Yeah.
Why is he taking
it? I remember thinking to myself, I swear I've seen him miss a couple, you know, and then that graphic comes up and then there's the statistic that he's, you know, missed five of his last eight penalties with his last successful one apparently scored in November 2016.
Yeah. Only Juan Pablo Angel has a worse record.
Yes.
At the penalty
spot. We think of Guardiola as being this guy, attention to detail guy, and then Guardiola comes out afterwards and says, "Oh, you know, it's my fault because I should, you know, Jesus wanted to take it, but we put it upon Mahrez because he'd been taking them so well in training." And it's like, Guardiola's a details man. He must know. Well, he must know that in that kind of situation, it's a mile away.
Is that
from
true?
A training
though,
penalty.
Is he not?
Well,
just,
he might be covering.
Is he not just killing the discussion?
Yeah, of course he is. Yeah,
that must be it.
But one of the journos did put that stat. Marcus just raised to Guardiola. He's like, I wasn't aware of that.
Come on.
He's like, are you serious?
Yeah, come on. Yeah, come on. Come on.
Well, he didn't. And then Guardiola said, well, he'll get the next one, you know, in this life or the next.
I don't think Sergio's on the bench.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Poor old Mahrez, though. But there we are. All right. After the break, we're going to be talking about Arsenal and Bournemouth. We'll see you in a moment.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. First, let's go to emails with Big Lukey Moore.
I am stepping into Pete Donaldson's shoes, and I have taken the time to look at the email inbox and choose a couple.
Yes.
Rather than just say...
Is that how it works?
Well, not with Pete. Okay. Even though he says, oh yeah, there weren't any at the moment. Oh, and here's a guy that was slacking me off. We'll talk about him.
Yeah.
That's basically Pete.
Are you going in Pete's bonnet for him?
Yeah, Pete's bonnet for him. Yeah, exactly. Gillingham fans have come out of the woodwork.
Yes, I did. I did see that.
So I'll bring you guys up to speed. Actually, do you know what?
Portsmouth are in League One.
Brendan Roberts has been in touch. Loads of people have been in touch, but I've selected Brendan. He says, my highlight of the week this week was seeing Gillingham garb Championship hopefuls Portsmouth 2-0 at Fratton Park. My specific highlight was a goal scored by Tom Eaves, who Luke once described as, and I think I'm getting this right, one of the worst strikers he'd ever seen. Gill's previous record coming into this game was 1.5 games, and we're beating 4-0 by Pompey in the Carabao Cup last month. It was actually the Johnstone's Paint Trophy, I think, because Andy Brassel's AFC Wimbledon knocked Pompey at the Carabao Cup. Mm. But who's counting? Warmly, Brendan Roberts. Eve's goal at the weekend. So I went to go see Gillingham on the first day of the season last season.
I remember you talking about
him. They played Southend, and it was a ridiculous game. And I think he might have got a hat-trick. I think he got a couple. And honestly, he was dreadful.
Yeah.
It's like he could hardly move. He was like a really poor man's Andy Carroll.
Mm. I thought you could say Andy Brassel.
if you like.
Yeah. Yeah.
You couldn't Adam and Eve's it.
No, you couldn't. Exactly. Yeah. And the goal he scored at Fratton Park, no joke. Have you seen it?
No.
No joke. Back to goal on the corner of the penalty area, comes to him, flicks up his left foot over the defender and volleys it in with his right foot. It was incredible. It was like, I'm not making it all about me, but it was like a personal fuck you to me.
What I love about Brendan there is that he's been sitting on that for nearly just over a year now.
Yeah. I admire that.
I admire
when
that.
You're a Gillingham fan, it's little victories, isn't it?
Well, that's a big victory.
Oh, come on. Resentment is the backbone of social media.
That's true. And football.
And football, yeah. Come on.
And what else we got here? Oh, yeah. A few people got in touch about this as well. Jacob Fenton was the email that caught my eye. He, to make us aware of a frankly ridiculous comeback in the FA Youth Cup. Have you seen this?
Yes.
Right. BBC covered it online, so some people may have seen it. Have you seen this, Marcus?
I don't think so.
Nuneaton Borough in the FA Youth Cup were 7-2 up after 57 minutes.
Oh, no.
And Hales Owen Tam managed to come back to win 9-8.
Oh, man.
There were 8 goals in the last 28 minutes.
That's different class. That is absolutely...
83 people in the crowd witnessed that.
Can I just say, if this was in the Greek second division, eyebrows would be raised.
Yes.
You're not on the continent now, Andy.
Say no more, Andy. Say no more.
We don't have corruption in England. Yeah. Yeah. There we go. So
that's fantastic, so though.
It was.
Do
it was,
me a favour.
Nuneaton Borough were 8-7 up after 86 minutes, and they still lost. What a
I love that. So the who were the other side?
Nuneaton Borough and Hales Owen Town.
Yeah, Town.
Yeah,
had pulled a load of goals back.
Yeah,
but Nuneaton still scored in that time
To stop the momentum. They probably thought that's done now.
Yeah.
No, still got beat 9-8. What a game.
I would love to believe when that goal that looked like it was the clincher was over, the guy who scored it went over to the corner flag and did that
it's over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sign.
The Benitez. The Benitez.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
but
it.
Which manager got really pissed off at Benitez doing
Allardyce.
That?
Sam Allardyce.
That's right, yeah.
Who got pissed off?
Yeah.
Just go through the traditional English manager.
You get that.
Wasn't Warnock. He wasn't in the division. Oh, he might have been. I can't remember.
Speaking of that, I went down the traditional English managers to look for how likely Alan Kirby was to get the Villa job. He's still in there.
Is he still in there?
Like 100 to 1 or something.
No way.
Yeah.
I'd love to see Kirby back.
Yes, particularly to tutor Thierry Henry and John Terry. I'll show you how to do it, guys.
Yeah. I'll show you how to.
You need my mentorship.
I'll show you how to do something, which I did ages ago.
Love him. Absolutely love him. Right then. Arsenal. They gubbed Fulham 5-1. We've got our Arsenal back, was one of the chants coming from the Arsenal end at Craven Cottage. After 8 matches, Arsenal just 2 points off the top, gentlemen. Are they properly up and running now, Luke?
9 games in a row, they've won in all competitions.
It's impressive.
They seemed, you know, it's hard to sound Emery because it's still very early, but uncharacteristically ruthless. I mean, their players they've brought in off the bench made a contribution as well. I was looking at this really from a Fulham point of view. I mean, I know you'll probably have some strong feelings on this, Marcus, but Fulham are really in bad nick. I mean, it's not been mentioned that much because I think, as we talk about a lot on this show, people like to pigeonhole teams and think, oh, that team played really good football in the Championship and they're quite good to watch. So
but they'll be okay.
So the other reason for that, Luke, I think, is there's always a risk when a club comes out of the transfer window and we're saying, wow, they've done some great business. Yeah. And that's usually also means they've done a lot of business. And is it too much?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the manager's having to integrate players. And not that, I think, will disrupt the dynamic, the momentum that they had as they come up. There's no doubting that they've signed some good players. But I think it's the lack of continuity to some extent.
But I agree with that. But they've also got to, Jokanović has got to drill his team. They've got to be drilled. Yeah. They are the worst team in the Premier League without the ball. They are so bad without the ball.
Yeah. They must have conceded more shots than any other team in the league.
Yeah, they've conceded more goals easily.
They have, definitely. I'd love to see Cyrus Christie's average position against Arsenal, who are a team coming off the back of 8 wins in a row, who at their best will pass you to death.
Yeah.
One of the goals Arsenal scored was one of the goals of the season. And Christie could not drop in. None of them could drop in. None of them could tighten up and make it really, really difficult to be broken down. They have to understand that in a game against a team like Arsenal, even at home, there's going to be long periods of the game where you are going to have to dig in. You're going to have to ride it out. You're going to have to defend properly. And without the ball, they are terrible.
But even if Fulham had 65% of the ball in that game, they still probably lose it. Because what I don't understand is why do you decide to experiment with 3 at the back when you've got a team with and I know what you're saying about Christie getting up the pitch and not really getting back.
Cyrus the virus. Gratuitous Con Air reference. Yeah.
No, never gratuitous.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
The idea that would be a good idea to leave that much space in the wide areas when Arsenal, never mind the passing, what about the pace? It's not really about the passing with Unai Emery teams in general, but look at the way they can make quick transitions. Look at Lacazette, and on top of that, even more so, Aubameyang when he came on. Mkhitaryan is very, very quick as well. It's nuts. It's a nuts tactic.
I think with Fulham, I think that they've had a little bit of joy. I mean, I watched them when they beat Burnley at home. They scored 4 goals and they were easily the better. Burnley were going through a bad
period. The signs were there on the open day of the season, though, against Palace. They got absolutely sucker punched.
Sure.
Yeah.
But you're right. But I think for Fulham fans, they would have watched that and thought, do you know what? That's just, we're up in the Premier League. Yeah, we'll get used to that. We, you know, at times Fulham outplayed Palace, so they'll think, yeah, okay, on another day, we would have won that game and so on. Mm. We watched them at Wembley against Spurs. There was a little period where they actually had a bit of domination and Mitrovic
scored.
Second
half, well,
yeah, exactly. And again, Fulham fans may think, oh, well, against Spurs, you know, they are a better side, but we had that little bit of we'll be okay. And it's that idea of, but it'll come good. We'll click. The signings will click. And now, when you look at the way the results are going, especially, you know, that Arsenal, I mean, losing 5-1 at home is very bad. It was so soft. It's kind of like, hang on, when is this going to click? Because you suddenly find yourself, you're in December, you're in the bottom three or whatever, and you're thinking, bloody hell, is this going to click? Are we going to integrate these players and so on? And it's suddenly panic stations, and Fulham are not the type of side, as Luke has said, and I'm sure a lot of people think, to think, right, let's just keep it tight now, let's just be solid, let's do the basics.
Yeah. In perspective, Andy, you know, if they carry on the way they're going now, they'll concede 100 goals this season.
Yeah,
wow.
And that's you'll be relegated.
But you're right about Jukanovic needing to drill them. I mean, they're in one of the hardest positions because Premier League clubs, and not unreasonably, I think, sometimes, always think about it that if we're in trouble, let's just hold on until the winter window. The last thing they need to do, as James underlined, is buy more players.
Yeah.
They need to streamline. They need to work with the players they've got. The thing
You're
is...
You're going they should have a Mitroglou moment.
No. No.
They need
no. He's available.
They need
He's
more Mitrovic moments.
I think the thing is... It's nice to believe that there's a plan. Like with Wolves, I mean, what they've done very well as having that stability, which is the complete opposite of Fulham, to compare them to another promoted side, is the fact that they've been able to drip signings in two or three at a time. Now, that's ideal because, as James says, you maintain that momentum from the previous season. But with Fulham, the identity is completely gone. And some of those players, okay, some of them you feel will really contribute, like Seri will really contribute. But others, Vieto, they've just picked them up because they're there. They're opportunity signings. They're not planned signings.
You can sort of see what he's done, though, because they did have their style in the Championship, which served them well. Mm. And Jukanovic is not going to change that. He's thinking, right, we'll go into the Premier League playing a similar style. And in the early stages of the season, you thought, OK, you can see that, but we'll bring in better players because we need better players.
Yeah.
You know, Cardiff have shown that they haven't really improved significantly and they're having a bad time. Wolves have done it well, as you say, although they slightly different situation. And Fulham have just thrown an awful lot at it, and as you,
I think it's a lack of humility as well. Though I think they've probably thought, or Jukanovic has probably thought, they've seen other teams like last season. Obviously, no promoted team went down. I think he's probably thought at home we can do it, we can knock it about, we can play football.
Well, I thought
at
they
home.
Competed well until the Ramsey goal. And the Ramsey goal just killed them.
Yeah. But they do. This is the thing: they create chances.
I saw them on the open day. They were by far the better team against Crystal Palace in the first half. They absolutely battered them and they couldn't score. And they just got undone.
Yeah.
I agree with to a certain extent with what you're saying about the Ramsey thing. But this keeps happening to them.
Well, look at they conceded the same goal twice where you have a striker back to goal, pinning the centre-back and he's able to spin the centre-back and just finish.
Mm.
And it's just like that is just that was too easy twice.
Yeah, yeah,
I think Lacazette and Aubameyang had the same goal. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
That needs improving.
But what about Arsenal, though? I mean, in previous results, you know, against Watford at home, you sort of think, okay, it was a bit of a battle, but they came through it.
They were lucky to get out of that.
But they got out of it, though. And there's been a few results where you think, okay, not amazingly convincing, but they got the result. But when you see that game, and yes, Fulham are there for the taking, but Arsenal, James, it does look like that they're coming to it's coming to fruition what Emery's trying to do there.
Yeah, look, I mean their away record under Arsene Wenger in what the last year 18 months horrendous.
Yeah, bad. Yeah, really
all
bad.
Of a sudden they're not only picking up points, they're winning games away from home and consistently as well. Now, what I would say is if you look at the fixtures that they've had since the first couple, these are games you'd expect a team like Arsenal to be winning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Emery deserves credit for matching that kind of expectation because we've certainly seen it's easier said than done, not only with Arsenal, but it's easier said than done with new managers replacing managers who've been entrenched for a long, long time. And he looks to be succeeding in getting his ideas across. This was also, I think, impressive from the point of view that they were in Azerbaijan on Thursday.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't get in until 5 o'clock in the morning on Friday. And okay, it's a much changed team and all that sort of thing, but that brings with it problems as well, and he's shown himself able to manage that quite well. I think there's a lot to be encouraged by, and I just like the fact that it's not either or with Aubameyang or Lacazette. It is, you know, we can actually make this work together.
That is a real positive.
I think Emery deserves credit as well, even in these early stages, for improving players. We've often said on the Ramble that Wenger and Arsenal were an undercoached team under Wenger.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, but the improvement we've seen already from Bellerin, from Iwobi, from Rob Holding, who played very well yesterday, that's encouraging signs for Arsenal fans that Emery's come in. He's got a big job, as I said last week, to unpick the things that he thinks have been done wrong in the latter years of Wenger's reign. Yet he's also starting to improve players. I mean, Welbeck made a contribution as well yesterday. So it's really, really encouraging.
Is he going to wear the long puffer jacket when it gets cold?
That's when you know it's going to go wrong.
But he was, I mean, a lot's been made of the we've got our Arsenal back thing, but I think he made quite an interesting point after the game and saying, like, how that enthusiasm is contagious.
Yep.
The players are enjoying playing for the club again. It's been a pretty miserable experience for the last few years. Even though it's a London derby and they don't have far to come, having that kind of away support was good for the players.
Yep.
So, you know, all that's encouraging. You're not only changing the culture within the dressing room, within the training ground, but you're changing the environment around the team at games, be it at the Emirates or away from home. That's a big positive.
I'll tell you what, though, easier to go to Fulham in early October than in mid-December. All the wind off the Thames.
Well, that's why I wonder if Emery, you know, we will see that long sort of sleeping bag type jacket.
But he'll be able to do the zip more effectively.
Yeah. Well, you'd hope so, wouldn't you, Andy? It's a very low bar that's been set there.
An incredibly low bar. It's a very high bar that's been set in Bournemouth. They've got another impressive win away at Watford this time. They're up to sixth with 16 points after 8 games. Only Arsenal, Chelsea and Man City have scored more. They do concede a fair few goals as well, which is consistent with last season, because they didn't struggle to score goals. They struggled to keep them out. But the increase in their goals has been very evident, Andy, this season. And they are having a bloody lovely time, Bournemouth, and it's good to see.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they took advantage of a particular situation at Watford with Cabasele going off. But
they took a nightmare, didn't he?
Honestly,
that was so bad.
He could have gone for the elbow.
I think he's had what's called a Wes Morgan.
It was eerily similar to that.
Oh, the Wes Morgan thing, honestly.
Yeah.
We'll get
and
to
all,
that.
All on the same player. Sorry.
Back to Bournemouth.
From Watford and Bournemouth. Yeah. David Brooks had an unbelievable start.
Fantastic player, he left.
He's
a great
been
player.
Absolutely tremendous. And I think we're going to touch on Sheffield United later, but, you know, it's enormous credit to Chris Wilder and what he's done there. That a player. Mm-hmm. I think as well, it shows how the Premier League has changed. I think if you looked at a player like that 10 years ago, you would say, no way is that kid playing in midfield for a Premier League team.
Yeah.
He's too little. Mm. Shove him out on the wing.
Yep.
Whatever. But the way that he's been able to bring his influence to bear very, very quickly mm-hmm. on some games for Bournemouth is very, very impressive. And he's been one of the main players who's helped them step up a level. I mean, they were just so ruthless as well. It's one thing for a team to go down, but to... like, put your foot on the throat and not take it off is something else entirely.
Away from home as well.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that about David Brooks. Because, you know, he's got a handful of caps for Wales as well, about him being potentially farmed out on the wing. The Danny Murphy syndrome, if you will. But that, I suppose that's a wider point I'd sort of want to make with Bournemouth. You know, if you look, they've got, you know, obviously they've got the English coach. They've got a number of their squad is largely based of English players. Yeah. They're playing...
Or British players. Because they've got Ryan Fraser as well.
Sure, but I mean, you can widen it to British, but even if with English, there's still largely. But okay, fine, British players.
And even Josh King sounds English.
Yeah, Yeah.
Well, I mean, we've all been through that moment, haven't we, when we first just sort of came across Josh King, looked him up, and went, what? He's Norwegian?
Give him a passport.
I did not expect that.
That's a bit disappointing.
Yeah.
So considering that England don't produce too many coaches and managers, certainly on the scale that other European countries do, and so on and so forth. Bournemouth, for my money, as a big England fan, as you all know, quite a sort of shining example, perhaps, to other clubs, because, as you say, you have...
Yeah, I think
But a different approach. It shows you that England can...
It's a curious case.
They can do it, if you see what I mean.
I think Bournemouth are a curious case, because I wonder whether Eddie Howe just fits that club so well. He has the run of the place down there. He's been there for such a long time. Of course, he famously popped up to Burnley. It didn't work out for him when he came back again. Mm. And he feels even more comfortable probably than he did then. And sooner or later, he's going to be picked off. Or sooner or later, he's going to have temptation get put in front of him to go and do something. Now, you know, at the very top end, it might be England. It might be a far bigger club than Bournemouth, who, of course, play in front of 11,000 fans every week or whatever. And that'll be really interesting, not only to see if he takes it or not, because there is a ceiling to what Bournemouth can achieve. I think we all agree on that. It'll be interesting to see if he takes it or not, and interesting to see if he does take it, how he performs, because I don't know whether he will get the setup he's got at Bournemouth at a club any bigger than Bournemouth. In fact, I don't think he will.
So much of that is to do with the staff. I mean, what he's done very well is surrounding himself with people he's trusted. That's something that works very well for him. I think to look at Eddie Howe in isolation is not really the right way to look at it. I think, you know, we can talk about the fact that for his personal life and for his family, he wanted to move back down to Bournemouth. But I think the fact that he's surrounded himself with former teammates, people he really trusts, so he can effectively delegate. I mean, we're talking about Arsene Wenger before, and that's something that he never effectively did, especially in the latter years of his career. So that's something that really works for Eddie Howe. So if he can deal with the move itself, I think it'll be about how many of those people he takes with him.
I agree.
It's a shame for Bournemouth fans that we're talking about their record Premier League win by saying their manager's probably off.
Jefferson Lerma.
good has he been?
What a signing.
Yeah, how good is he? He was imperious at the weekend.
Yeah. Expensive signing as well. We talked about, for example, you know, the business Fulham have done.
Yeah.
Hard to get these sort of things right. And I think that's one of the reasons why Bournemouth have trusted going with, as Marcus was saying, British and Irish players and having that kind of core there, because I think they've occasionally had their fingers burnt when they've gone to other markets outside of the Premier League, and yet he looks the business for them. He gives them that edge. He gives them, the more importantly, the platform to do what they do best, which is that kind of house style of football of technical, fast, agile sort of wing play, and he was imperious on the weekend.
He's also not on course for his usual 15 bookings in a season, which is very disappointing. Yeah. Not the new Vieira, not the new Olivier Decor.
Absolutely. Just before we go to the break, I think for me, to try and clarify what I was saying about Bournemouth there is, you know, if you're a young English manager and you look at the old traditional English managers and so on, you look at Eddie Howe and you go, well, I'll tell you something, that's a bit of inspiration there. And
are you basically just saying he's more handsome than Allardyce?
Well, it's an English fan.
I don't need to say that.
it's also an English manager who actually likes to keep the ball.
Well, this is what I mean. I'm just saying that whole kind of, oh, well, we don't really do that here. Hang on, there's an example there, and it might only be one example.
Yeah.
But it's an example nonetheless. And the players that they're, you know, look at Brooks, look at Lewis Cook, you know, those kind of players. We can do this, guys! That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. The South Coast just signed a new contract, though, so leave it.
Yeah, no, that's fine. It all feeds in.
Leave it.
It all feeds in. Anyway, let's go to an ad break right now. The Football Ramble, everybody. The preview show sponsored by Bet365 is out on Thursday. It's going to be a cracker, Luke Moore.
It is.
Oh, Jim's back for it.
We a new best better as well, because James Dick fell short. Dicko.
Oh, Dicky boy.
He went for a Burnley win. Of course, they weren't able to close it out, so we're looking for a new person to jump in the hot seat. Not you, Andy Duncan. You had your chance.
let's go to the Championship. Sheffield United are top. Chris Wilder's boys. They're top of the league, Andy.
What boys? What boys?
Wilder's boys.
What an amazing job he's done there. I mean, obviously brought them up into the Championship with 100 points or whatever it was. Before that, did a great job at Northampton. And it is a packed Championship, as we keep saying. It's really close. Mm-hmm. It's full of about 16 or 17 teams who've been in the Premier League. It's a competitive division. And to be fair, they rode their luck a bit against Hull. Hull rallied in the second half.
Are we allowed to say it's a Yorkshire derby, James, or is Hull strictly Humberside?
I'm a Yorkshireman, Andy. Yeah. I'm from Hull. Don't bring this Humberside nonsense at me, okay? Oi. Just because we're out on the coast does not mean
James,
we're not part of Yorkshire.
It's certainly not Humberside, is it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Is that worth it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think, you know, you can't hear the laughter with the listeners.
James, you're famously, and if it wasn't famous, it's going to be now, a Leeds United fan.
Uh-huh.
You were born in Hull, so how do you feel about Hull's being bottom of the Championship at the moment?
I've got a lot of sympathy for Hull. They don't need my sympathy. But I grew up, before I had a driver's license, I did have a season ticket at Hull as well.
Right.
Partly because they were back in the third division when I was growing up. And
as soon as you could drive, you were off.
Pretty much, yeah.
See you later, guys.
I think it's a shame what's happened there. Not only because I think we should also remember that the Alums saved the club, but their subsequent running of it has soured the relationship that they've had with fans, to say the least.
It's a tricky one, isn't it?
And they're very much aware of that and have taken a backward step. Only go to away games, if that, these days, because of the reception they get at the KCOM. And there's just this kind of like, it's almost like letting it just dwindle away. You know, I mean, you look at I remember when they last went down from the Premier League, they managed to keep that core of Premier League players together. So they had a very good squad for the Championship. This time around, so we talking about last season, when Leonid Slutsky got the job, you know, he was expecting they would do the same, and instead those players were sold from under him. You know, and it was again very much kind of like, we're just going to try and get some players on loan from Liverpool's youth teams and Chelsea's youth teams. Too raw, not cut out really for maintaining, well, getting a push in the Championship. And you now look at the situation they're in, and you can completely understand why they're in it, because it's they've just allowed themselves to
drift,
let themselves go.
The amazing thing about Hull is it hasn't happened sooner.
Mm. Well, really, I'm still staggered from my childhood to have seen Hull in the Premier League twice.
Mm.
Staggered.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I bet. Yeah,
but as you were saying, Luke, about Sheffield United, it's interesting. You know, people always say about Guardiola or Mourinho, let's see how they would deal with a team that's, you know, near the bottom of the table. Let's see how they deal with the team of 30. With Chris Wilder, he's done so many different situations, as you say, with Northampton, with Oxford, now with Sheffield United. You are seeing him do everything.
Yeah, and we've got teams in the Championship, as James sort of touched on there, full of, you know, depending on your lookout, at Premier League quality players, really. I mean, but teams like Stoke and you know, to a lesser extent now, Aston Villa, but those types of teams.
Or West Brom.
West Brom was a great example. Sheffield United came 10th last season, obviously consolidated their Championship status, and now they're having a real push. And it really is, I mean, obviously it's down to the players as well, but a lot of it's down to the manager. He's done such a fantastic job there. They've got four tough games coming up, and they haven't really been blowing teams away. Like, this Hull thing is a good example, because Hull are bottom of the league, as we know, and Sheffield United, they did give away a lot of chances in this game. So it will remain to be seen if they can keep it up, because the four games they've got coming up are difficult. But so far, yeah, more power to Wilder's elbow. He's done brilliantly.
Absolutely. Are we going to see Thierry Henry with John Terry in the Aston Villa dugout soon?
Just bear in mind, because this is the Football Ramble, whatever you say, the opposite will happen as soon as we finish recording.
Absolutely.
So don't feel under any pressure, because that's going to happen regardless.
Feel free to drop in a double negative when you talk about this, so you can get out of jail free there. What do you reckon, chat? I mean, Andy, you were keen when Henry was being linked to...
Was it Bordeaux?
I think it was Bordeaux in France. Well,
only from a romantic perspective. Because, of course, we don't really know what he can do as a coach.
That's true.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Is him popping up in Aston not as romantic?
Villa's a big club.
It is a very big club.
I don't see why not. Just the question is, how would he deal with it? The thing is, we know that how he's worked as a striker coach with Belgium, because the impact that he's had on those players has been notable. They all absolutely eat out of his hand. And you wonder if it was kind of the Roberto Martinez payoff, because all the senior players in Belgium were so incredibly underwhelmed by Martinez's appointment. It's like, it's a bit.
How gutted were they out of 10?
It's a bit like if you took your family to live in a less nice town than you did, but you went to the kids, oh, here's some Lego.
Right, okay.
And it's the best Lego money can buy.
Okay.
That's what it's like getting in Thierry Henry as striker coach. But of course... What he would do, and he was promoted, and he became an assistant after that, and he's been promoted further to Roberto Martinez.
So he's impressed, isn't he?
Yeah, but I guess the thing is, we don't really know exactly what he does, exactly what influence he has, exactly what he'll be like as a first-team coach. It's really sexy. There's no getting away from that. But we don't know how it would really pan out for Villa, and especially Villa where they're at the moment. And lost again at the weekend, so they're right in the middle of...
They lost to your adopted home at Millwall. Andy.
It's not my adopted home. Well, I was born in Lewisham.
You were celebrating... Okay, fine. You were celebrating the result earlier before we came on air. You were saying...
There's nothing like Millwall versus Villa at the Den.
Yeah, fine.
It's pretty
very,
special.
A very loving
affair. The talk is that Thierry Henry is gonna come in with John Terry as his assistant.
John Thierry.
It's like an NFL setup. Defensive coordinator, attacker.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're feeling.
Is that the way forward?
Or it's like Roy Evans, Gerard Houllier.
Yes. Well, we hope not.
Yeah.
but one Kerbishly and grit.
Yeah. But one.
Ah, yes.
One wasn't defensive, and one was attacking. And that's what they were known for.
Sven and Ford.
Yes. any of
them. So what you're seeing is
one of the accordion.
Torn on the accordion.
One on the piano.
You're seeing Henri as the offensive coordinator of Villa and Terry as the defensive coordinator.
Well, I think if anyone's going to be offensive, it's going to be John Terry, really, isn't it?
And get Kolarov in as special teams.
Yeah, free kicks. I do. Were you talking about when Martinez was given the Belgium job, or he was going for it?
forget what Luke said when they were, you know, what is the conversation? They're sitting there because Belgium obviously were not very good defensively and so on. And they were thinking, well, Robbie, you know, you struggled to set up a team defensively, right? Yeah. And you said, hang on, what's that behind the curtain? It's Thierry Henry.
Who have you got behind the curtain there? Claudio Gentile, Paolo Maldini, yeah, you know, Franz Beckenbauer.
Va-va-boom.
There he is. Don't you worry about that.
I know what you're thinking. Yeah. We're going to score twice as many goals.
Yeah. but they finished third at the World Cup.
They did.
Okay, they got that bronze medal. Ahead of Gareth's guys.
So they're not taking Bobby Martinez with them. Yeah. That's the thing, you know.
Yeah. Marcus just called England Gareth's guys.
Gareth's guys.
Yeah. Hey, it's the football ramble, baby.
File that alongside Big Veng and the Gun Guns.
No, it's not anymore. That's a thing of the past.
Yeah, it's true.
Thing of the past. We've got to think of a new one for Emery. Emery's empire. Anyway, let's crack open the WhatsApp group, gentlemen.
Which one?
Should we have the jingle?
Yeah, put the jingle in there.
Okay, there it is.
Have you got a little jingle for that, Pete? Have you got a little jingle for that, Pete? Have you got a little jingle for that?
No, I've not got a jingle. No, we haven't got a jingle.
For God's sake!
Now then, little update on Romário. We spoke about Romário in Brazil. He was going for Rio State governor.
Well, I messaged you last night late on and said, look, what are we going to do for the WhatsApp group this week? What do you fancy? And you replied saying, don't worry, there's Brazilian elections coming up. I'll have an update for you tomorrow.
If there's one thing we cover quite extensively on the show is Brazilian politics.
Marx is the Jon Snow of the Ramble. Yeah. Swingometer in the silent.
Only when Romario's involved or Ronaldinho.
Ronaldinho's yet to... Wait, George Weah, get the president, we'll have a bit of that. Yeah. There's a theme here, Andy.
Can we simply say Romário fora?
Indeed, he's out.
Is he?
He's out of the running. But Beto got elected. I don't know what in... I couldn't find the info, if I'm honest with you. I was flicking through those Brazilian tabloids and they didn't give away too much
information. Basically, Marx's prep for this show is...
Don't give it away.
Google News, Brazilian... Romário, Ronaldinho, George Weah or Gigi Becali over in Romania.
Yeah.
Hit the translate button. Get a couple of quotes, chuck it in there. He'd do it a whole hour on that, if he could.
Lovely old Jones. Yeah. Andy? you were prone to say something there. But you're concerned about the bigger picture in Brazil, of course, the far-right candidate who's...
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean,
we don't like to talk too much politics and give away, but far-right candidate as a president of a big country, that concerns me.
Yeah. Far-right candidate endorsed by a number of footballers.
Lucas Moura. Lucas Moura involved.
Rivaldo.
I'd say all the...
Ronaldinho.
Rivaldo, I saw that
You're in a quandary now, Speller.
I am.
Yeah, Ronaldinho's tacked his colours to that mask.
Does it surprise you?
He's probably drunk.
I'm full of money, let's drink.
I want to take it back to less glamorous territory and say, did you guys see what happened at Carlisle United this weekend?
No, tell me.
No.
But down in League Two, Carlisle United went to play against Oldham at Boundary Park.
This is it.
There wasn't a far-right march or anything like that. I'm not linking it back to that.
Not for Brazilian politics, anyway.
Midfielder Gary Liddell for Carlisle United came out of the tunnel wearing a Tom Parks shirt, who's one of his teammates.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, Tom Parks was also wearing a Tom Parks shirt.
Oh, hang on.
So Gary Liddell didn't do the decent thing, which was to get instantly booked, because that's what you should have done, and see what the referee did. But after 3 or 4 minutes, it was noticed, and he had to go and change
the game
shirt.
Started?
Yeah, the game carried. The game played. They're playing the game, and two people with Parks number 4 on the back. He didn't do the decent thing and get booked, though. He should have done.
I thought you were going to say...
to the ref, this will test you.
I thought you were going to say he got booked and gave Parks his name.
He should have.
Like on Sunday football, if you've got a ring.
I think
never done.
I think the fourth official noticed and made him change it. But I don't know how that happens. There's two of one shirt. Weird.
Bit of banter.
Well, they always have a couple of spares, don't they?
But some players, do they not? They might change the jersey at half-time. If it's like, I don't know, they're a bit sweaty.
I don't think in Carlisle versus MK they swap shirts in the tunnel at half time, do they?
No, but if it was a rip or something, I don't know.
Right, yeah. Sure. My favourite shirt based farrago, I have to say, was in the Champions League about 10 years ago when Brian Bergenu was playing for Lyon.
And he
scored the fifth goal against Sparta, I think it was.
Oh.
And he took his shirt off to reveal another shirt.
Oh, obviously,
got booked.
Who was it who played for Sheffield United? Was it Marcelino? Someone for Sheffield United did that as well, famously, back in the day. Yeah.
You make him sound like a Russian doll, Andy.
Yeah, it was a bit like that.
Smaller and smaller and smaller.
He chucked his shirt into the crowd, but he had another one underneath. It was 20 odd years ago, though.
My personal favourite on this was when Arkadiusz Milik, the Napoli striker, did his cruciate ligaments last year. the next game, Insigne scored, ran over to the sideline to be given a Milik shirt to basically present as a gesture of solidarity. He was given a shirt, holds it up, and he doesn't know that the name on the back of it is not Milik's. Who wasn't injured.
Yeah. Milik's like, cheers.
I love it. We've been in the studio so long, now the European football chat's coming up.
Oh, sorry.
We're going to have to stop it there. But that kind
foreign
of chat,
muck.
That kind of chat, ladies and gentlemen, can be heard on the Continent, which is out every Wednesday and Saturday. But thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to this On the Continent takeover of the Football Ramble. Jim will be back on the preview show this Thursday, and then Pete will be back on Monday. So normality will be resumed very soon.
And can I just cut in there and say, for those of you who are wondering where Pete is, and this is not a drill or a joke, Pete is currently in Zimbabwe.
Yep.
So you want to tune in on Monday and find out what he's been doing.
Absolutely right. But Andy and James, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Pleasure. Thank you for having us. It's an honour and a privilege.
Ruddy pleasure. We'll obviously see you on Wednesday for On the Continent, which is available, as I say, every Wednesday and Saturday on Apple, Google, or wherever you prefer to get your pods.
And can I just say, before we go, James is such a money grabber that he asked if we could be paid the same and do On the Continent today instead of Wednesday as well, so we didn't have to come back in. How do you plead, James?
Guilty.
No further questions.
This was a Radio Staccato production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.